Mas no, not good. Oh, there it is. What is the origin of the phrase "as sick as a parrot"? To avoid United States quarantine and livestock importing restrictions, people smuggling parrots from South America into the US dope the birds on tequila as they near the Mexican border. Okay, I wasn't expecting that. Careful timing with the binge will ensure the birds are sleeping it off through the border crossing formalities and will not greet the officials with a mouthful of verbals as the breeds won't. Having thus avoided detection, the downside for the exotic loudmouths is coming to with the mother and father of a hangover. This queasiness manifests itself in the origin of the expression. Huh. There's other versions on here, but that's the top one. So there you go. You can take that away with you. Keep it in your knapsack for later, just in case you need sustenance of the curiosity variety. Or if somebody else does. Anyway. Another month, another one of these things. Longer than a month, quite frankly, but I have purchased a new PC in the time since, in the time since recording the last episode, and so this episode would be recorded on that new PC, but it turns out that I can't get any video or audio editing software to work on this new PC. So my best option is to use a really crappy laptop to record and edit this show. So, with time, we'll get there, with time. And as I say, I've come down with a bit of a chest infection by the feel of it. I've definitely got a sore throat, but it's difficult to breathe at the moment. And being asthmatic to begin with, that is so much worse. On the plus side, I have a slightly more masculine, hunky sounding voice. So anybody out there likes this sort of voice, feel free to enjoy this episode. I won't be any easier to understand, sadly, but there you go. So, the Wii U's decided to interrupt me and shout at me about Mario Odyssey. We'll get to Mario Odyssey later. I won't go into the last few weeks' worth of happenings. But there's a few things have been going on. Most interestingly, we've been hitting the cinema again. More recently, seeing Blade Runner 2049. Which I came away with mixed feelings from. Feelings I don't think that I have fully quantified in my head yet. I feel like it's a good piece of cinema. Generally. But I'm not sure I like it. And I'm not sure if it's... as good as people want it to be or say that it is. You always get that mad rush of people who are fans of a series, if this could be called a series, who initially will hyper defend something. Or there'll be people who react quite quickly in the negative towards something. And I think this Blade Runner especially needs a lot more time to absorb and consider what it's doing. More than just the messaging involved, but the way it's going about that messaging. Because obviously Blade Runner is the original film, and by extension or by reduction, the novel it's based on. All about philosophical thought and the nature of humanity and the soul and the mind, and a lot more than I can go into on a podcast such as this. Excuse me. But I think where the original thematic questions, where the original film asks these questions, it does so without actually asking those questions. I mean, there are moments there where it is obviously asking questions of the viewer, and they are done in a more subtle way than they are in this sequel. It felt like walking out of 2049, like it was asking the same questions with a touch of some new questions, but it was being incredibly obvious about it. Like, it knew where it was coming from, it knew the fans and those going in who would get the most from this sequel would be expecting certain things, so it purposefully lent into them to a far heavier degree than the original or than the sequel really needed to. And I felt, I don't know about disappointment, I'm not entirely sure how I feel about the film yet. I think I need to see it again. It's been a little while since I saw it. I saw it more or less the first day. When it comes to bigger film releases, I tend to try and get in first day, probably first screening. That has not been super successful lately. I booked tickets to see another film, which I'll get to later, and lost my booking details. So I'm having to catch up with myself on that film too. But yes, I see films generally the first couple of days, if I can. If it's something I think is worth really looking into and having enough time and quiet to absorb. Unlike Stephen King's It, which myself and my partner went to see, again, opening week. We said it saw it a few days later, and it must have been the first time this year at our local cinema. We're quite a big local cinema, like 15 screens, one IMAX screen, you know, for a relatively small town. It's quite a big cinema, so you get lots of people coming from outside of town certain days of the year. But generally it's a relatively quiet cinema because there's so many screens, because you can kind of pick and choose your type of screening and your film you're seeing and the time a little bit more freely, especially with passes that we've got, that you can get in and see a film on its opening day early in the morning and not have too many people in the room. But seeing Stephen King's It, I'm sat a seat away, like, it's to diverge slightly, but as an example, that screening of It wasn't the first screening that day or that week, but I've never seen a cinema so rammed, like full of people of all sorts of different ages and backgrounds, and a queue just going all the way to the front doors from the checking for the tickets for that screen, and I've never seen anything like it. It was a good 20 minutes before this, before the door opening, let alone the film starting. So that was interesting. But yeah, so being in that screening, it was great to see a packed cinema, like almost every single seat full. But you also have the double-edged sword of, yes, this is going to be successful. Well done to this film. And it's a cracking film, is it? You know, I won't go into detail about it today. But it is. For what it's trying to do. Fans of the book may disagree. But the double-edged sword is, there's so many people in there that it's pretty difficult to actually watch a film and enjoy it on its own, because you're being interrupted by people eating. Or when it comes to it, there was a couple of teenage girls to my right who talked through the entire film, who were called a 6-year-old boy a twat for turning, going down the stairs into his cellar without turning his light on. Like everything that every character did, they were mocking or complaining about, and it's like, and it's cool that people get into films, don't get me wrong, but you know, I'm the type of person who I really want to absorb the film itself, and having other distractions, especially with I have hearing problems on one side as well, so my hearing, I might pick up other things a bit more than others. It also didn't help that specific screening, that the audio for speech, specifically, the audio mix was out for some reason. This is like the second time I've had a screening where the audio has been out on a film in that cinema. So all the speech was coming from the front of the cinema, just the speakers directly below the screen. So you've got the surround sound, which is pumping out like heavy bass for things happening on screen, for music, for cars driving by, you know, sound effects, and occasional bits of speech. But everything else is coming directly from the front of the screen. So it's being drowned out really badly for me by all the other noises. Like I managed to get through it, and it was still entertaining, but it did detract somewhat from the experience, coupled with like these two girls to my right and some of the other people around me just talking or whooping out loud when you're trying to pay attention. Like, again, you kind of take it into with a pinch of salt. You expect some stuff like that at the screening. And you know it's going to happen in a big screening, but it's, at the same time, there's that disappointment where you don't get to experience it, the movie itself, in its full majesty. Yeah. Which means I probably will try and see it again if it's still screening nearby. But it was nice with Blade Runner, because there was none of that. You know, it was maybe 20 people in a 600 seat room, if that. And there was a couple of people chatting, you know, because there's always going to be some people who explain to each other what's going on in the script, or they think their partner's not smart enough, so they're explaining for them, like every relationship. Like, we've all done it to someone. Like, oh, that's... See, he's that guy's brother. And they know exactly what the fuck's going on already. But we can't help ourselves. We have to tell the people around us what's going on. Even though it's the first time we've seen it. It's not like we have exclusive knowledge. Anyway. So, it was good to absorb Blade Runner to an extent. But it's, while it isn't a stupid film, it isn't at all. And it does ask or attempt to be intelligent. Ask intelligent questions and confront people with ideas that the other film, the original, also did. But it's, like I say, it's more obvious about it, the times it's doing that. Narratively and like in regards to like world building and you know, background things happening. I can't go into it too much because I don't want to spoil it for people, because it is a film that can be very easily spoiled for people, and I don't want to do that. So I come away with just that feeling where I need to see it again, not because I really like it, but because I really need to get a good feel, an honest feel for what it's trying to do and how successful it is. I will say the visuals, every scene is beautiful, absolutely breathtaking. It's one of the things I really liked about Ridley Scott's Prometheus and the lesser Alien Covenant. One of the very good points was the more artistic, more still, more prolonged vistas and visuals going on in those films. And you know, Blade Runner is doing that as well. Rightly so, considering the source material, the original film. But it's a striking movie, very much so, visually. And you know, generally, it is like, whether it does these things well, it's still very striking, an interesting film. But I'm not 100% sure I have a clear opinion on it yet, which is why this is so rambling and all over the place. But on top of that, there have been a lot of reissues and screenings going on of older films. So I saw, please don't hate me for this, for the first time, I've seen bits of it before, but for the first time, Mel Brooks' Young Frankenstein, which was entertaining, was funny, right? But I think I came away with a different opinion on why I was finding it funny. Maybe to the point of overthinking it slightly. Because it felt much like, at its best example, just due to its time and how comedies were filmed, how Mel Brooks, you know, constructs his comic work. It felt like a Monty Python. It felt like that Monty Python movie, and now for something completely different. As in, really, the first sort of theatrical thing Monty Python did was just, if you haven't seen it, was just a ton of previously made sketches but redone for the big screen. And while there is this element of, this is a prolonged story, it's going through a story, right? Really, while there is a sort of chronological sequence of events, the way each scene is set up, it feels more like this is 50 sketches from a sketch show. And they're all themed the same theme, but each one is just a self-contained little sketch. So this is what would happen if Frankenstein's monster met a blind monk. How would that be funny, you know? And then, oh, this is what would happen if he did this, and this is what would happen if Frankenstein did that. And it's a unique way of writing theatrical comedies that has been lost to time, I think. So it's fun going in and seeing a completely different style of filmmaking that you know, people don't tend to use anymore. Like, you'll get stuff like American comedies, we'll use quotation marks in the air there, that kind of touch on that style, but yes, it's like a cross between the concept of a sketch show made theatrical and the style of humour that was popular, that made Carry On movies popular. It's like American Carry On, essentially, in sort of vibe, if that makes sense. And that's what kind of the prevailing sort of thought I took away from it was this. You know, when my other half asked me whether or not I enjoyed it, I didn't say yes or no. It was more, I was tied up with thinking about it as a sketch show. And so, like any other sketch show, it's like, some of those jokes were hit and miss, you know. But I enjoyed it in general. And, you know, some of the humour is dated. It's unlikely you'd get the massive knockers sort of style humour now as much. I mean, there are still comedians and writers that would put a joke like that in their scripts, films, TV, whatever, but it's far less prevalent nowadays than it was in the 60s and 70s. Just because the environment we live in is different now. And if somebody had written a joke about massive knockers now, if you haven't seen the film, and all stuff like the nods and winks past the fourth wall to the viewers, which happens a lot. If somebody had done something like that now, especially theatrically, it could be exactly the same joke, but I suspect the comedic timing and the pacing and the feel of it wouldn't be right. That we wouldn't laugh. But going back and watching the Young Frankenstein and joke and films and shows of its ilk, you can see what the bits are funny, because the timing is right. The performers have got that down. It doesn't feel like it's being exploitative when it's doing it. I suspect that's the difference now, that comedy now, the people who would write that sort of joke would feel like they were being exploitative, you know? I hope that makes sense. So, beyond that, I'm going to cough again. Beyond seeing Young Frankenstein, we also happened to catch the 30th anniversary screening of The Princess Bride about a week ago. And I have seen The Princess Bride before, but it's strange, The Princess Bride, because it feels like I haven't seen it before. It's one of these films where you swear you've seen kind of it in chunks, and so you've walked in on a room and it's playing and you just happen to sit and watch it from like two-thirds of the way through to the end, and then you happen to catch the beginning. But I've definitely seen it all the way through two or three times before seeing it on the big screen. And, you know, it's still as good as it ever was. It really is. And again, it's another sort of example of a changing style of humour, where the humour has not, I don't want to say more heart, but it does feel like an evolution of certain elements of things like Young Frankenstein. The fact that it isn't just a comedy, you know, that it is an honest adventure and romance, where the female lead isn't weakly written, not overly weakly written anyway. Like there's improvements that could be made, but there are no flimsy characters in The Princess Bride, I don't think. I think I don't like fans of The Princess Bride because they tend to be the real fans, the diehards. They tend to be slightly more obsessive, much like fans of less successful but cult classic films tend to be, you know. So, I mean, we went to see it because it just happened to be there on the listings for our local cinema, and it was like, it's showing tomorrow, I can get tickets straight away, it's free for us, essentially. So I just went and saw it, because it's a good film. But you know that there are some people in the audience, because they were talking out loud about it, who are obsessive about the film. Like one guy talking just in front of us to somebody else about how his girlfriend's just left the room because she hates the film, because he's made her watch it every day for 2 weeks. And then there's other people who have clearly either paid for or at least deliberately booked tickets to see this film on its 30th anniversary, where the couple are sitting there and they're just complaining about everything. The film starts and she has got her phone out and she's playing, you know, Busta Move on her phone. Like, thankfully she's at the back row, but we're at the back row as well. I can definitely see her phone screen glaring at me from the corner of my eye. And they're just moaning about things, joking about things, but not in a sort of fun along with the film sort of way, but kind of criticising it sort of sarcastically sort of way. And they're still doing it during the ending credits. And, you know, certain elements of The Princess Bride have aged kind of badly. And you get the feel that that was deliberate at the time anyway. Like the rodents of the big rats. I can never remember what they're called. Rodents of an unreasonable... So I don't know. Somebody can correct me later, I don't care. they look kind of goofy because it's just a guy in a suit on all fours, right? But you go in knowing what the film is like. You kind of know what the point of the film is and what its style is. But to go in and complain to the end and moan and make stupid jokes at the expense of the film you're watching, having deliberately booked tickets to watch it, it feels just so incredibly pointless. It's like, there could have been other people who really wanted to see this. And you're there in a room surrounded by fans, or at least well-wishers, of the film, who have also paid money or want to see it, and you're ruining it for them. Why are you doing that, you know? If you don't want to watch it, just leave. If you do want to watch it, watch it. Don't, I mean, maybe talk to your friend, but not in a such a derogatory sort of manner, you know? It belittles people around you and makes you look stupid because you booked tickets to see the film you're complaining about. It just doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't. And you get that element of, like, going to see The Shining, or, which I am going to do soon, or another film, knowing you own it on DVD already. It's like, sure, you could stay home and watch it there, but there's something about watching it on the big screen. But choosing to go, knowing you've got it at home, or knowing you don't really like the film that much, just for the sake of it, and ruining it for other people, that's just crappy, to be honest. And I know that's obvious, really. I'm not coming up with some revelatory call to arms here, you know, but it is kind of just, what's the point? And I'm pretty bitter about everything. So the fact that I'm disappointed that people would do that, you know, says a lot. But talking about other films, we have Thor Ragnarok and The Death of Stalin. I'm planning to get them seen within the next couple of days because I'm off work at the moment ahead of a special event. And because I'm not feeling well, that helps. Because I want to get back to talking about movies properly, really actually reviewing them. So I expect to post some written reviews for some of these films later. But also because it gives me more to talk to you guys about, if you're listening to this, you know. Anyway, so I'm going to be seeing Thor Ragnarok. I had originally, as I mentioned previously, booked tickets for Thor Ragnarok for the first screening on the first day. And then I lost my booking. So I'm just going to kind of wing it. Probably Monday, because Sundays are always super busy. Unless it's a bank holiday Monday, I don't know. And probably Death of Stalin on Monday as well. I know my partner wants to go see it. So, because it's we're fans of Imando Inucci. I've got an idea what to expect for both of them films, but I still am looking forward to seeing them, seeing if there's anything challenging in either of them or different, you know. Death of Stalin's the one that's going to be the most interesting to see. To bring us to my first big announcement, I am getting married in about 3 days. On Tuesday, 31st, Halloween, which is ridiculous enough. It was not my choice to have that day for my wedding day. We paid for the cheapest option available for us. So we're all in all paying about £170. And we're just doing the smallest registry office we could find. So it's just us, two witnesses, and the person marrying us. So we can't have friends or family. I can't have my daughter, which I think is probably a bit of a disappointment for her. But I think it's more of a disappointment for her than for me and my partner, because we don't really care about weddings as a concept. We want to be married, but we're just doing this to get it out of the way. You know, it is a thing you need to do to be married, you know, but if we could have done it about a month and a half ago, we would have. But, you know, my other half's mother is not coming. I have no family members, but, you know, none of her family members are coming. No friends are coming. The closest we have are our witnesses, which are Mac and Cameron from my day job. And they're a pair of differently aged people, brothers, who look exactly alike, but in the sense that one of them looks like he's from an alternative dimension, where he's the evil one to the other's good one. And that's kind of why I asked them, because I thought if I'm going to have kind of a cheap and kind of quick wedding, I want to take something away from it, so I figured I'll have interesting pictures at least. My suit's going to be interesting as well, when you take into account that most people don't know what my hair looks like. I kind of picked an interesting suit to go with my hair cut and colour. I am quite overweight, so I probably won't look so good in the pictures, but if I can't look good and I can't do something big, or we're trying to do something small and have fun, the thing I'm going to take away from it is kind of the unique little things I can get away with. So having a pair of people look like twins who aren't twins and kind of look the same, so that people go and look at the pictures and they'll be like, what's going on there? Who are they? I think that kind of tickles me a little bit. And like I say, we didn't book it for Halloween. It was just the first available day. So we're getting it done at 10:30 on Halloween in the morning. And then we're going to go straight home, give the boys, our witnesses, some gifts to say thank you. And then we're going to do... we're going to wait for kids to come around. We're not going to go out or do anything special early Halloween night. I am going to try and dress up slightly scary for the kids, but we're going to give out some sweets and stuff. And then at about 7 o'clock, we're going to head right out and go watch a screening of The Shining for our wedding day treat, because neither of us have actually sat down and watched The Shining. I should have by now, but you know, you miss some of these classics. So that should be an interesting example of what not to do as a married couple. excuse me. So yes, I'm looking forward to seeing that. Looking forward to the big day, but I'm the type of person where I kind of get nervous about little things running up to something, but I don't get excited about things until like the day before. So I won't get excited about Christmas until... I mean, I don't really like Christmas generally anyway. That's a whole other sort of arena of thought for me. But I won't get excited about things until the day before, so I'm not excited or scared about the wedding. I'm slightly nervous, maybe, because it's a big change in your life. And while we've been together for... over a decade, more or less. And it's we've waited long enough, so we're just doing it, finally. We promised ourselves we'd get it out of the way this year. I'd intended it to happen last year, but things get in the way, and so this year it is. But we're just going to get it out of the way and finally get married and make it as quick as possible, so it's as painless as possible. And there are, like I say, small nerves, because it feels like, you know, the last chance you've got to say no or to change your mind or to walk away is going. And while I don't want that to happen, and I don't want her to want that to happen, you still kind of are losing a little tiny amount more freedom. You know, I've not been tempted by another person or gone on it, tried to go out on dates with people or have a loose relationship. I'm very much in love with my partner. But there's something psychologically interesting about, you know, that moment. I am, while I'm not excited or scared yet, I am both slightly tinging of nervous. There's also the element of I don't want to fuck it up, you know. Although I don't think that'll be a problem for any of us. I am still looking forward to it as well. I'm happy that it's happening. To the point I've bought 2 wedding rings for myself, because my finger... Again, I'm overweight, so what can you do? My finger swelled up slightly. So my old ring, purchased a while back, was a little too tight. So I've had to pick up another bigger, much chunkier ring. And I also ordered one on Amazon, just in case, for an emergency sort of couple of pounds. And it's probably the one I want to wear over all the rings I happen to own. Out of all 3 of my wedding rings, the one I want to wear is the one I don't actually have access to at the moment. Although I do like the second one I picked up. But the idea of, you know, that wedding and then, you know, having it on Halloween without meaning to, and then going to see The Shining the day of your wedding day, that's unique, I think. Without intending to be, you know. Enough about movies for now. We've also picked up this month a few games. I mean, I've still been playing Overwatch, Halloween sort of update. Halloween Terror update just dropped. And I'm not playing it as much as I used to be, because of a couple other games kind of interrupting that sort of flow, but it's still regular. I just, after a year and a bit of special events and never actually getting the items you want from those special events, it's kind of demotivating slightly. I shall try and unlock the skins or items I want, but you know, it's more about playing the game now. I'm still focusing incredibly tightly on playing and perfecting my Sombra game, but I only play on console because my PC's not good enough for the PC version. I mean, it'll play it, but you know, it looks terrible. So, you know, I love Overwatch. I find it entertaining, but I haven't played as much as what I would like. I have been playing a whole lot of Fortnite. Originally got on board with Fortnite about a week after the open early access sort of pay to play sort of period. Because obviously the original, the base Fortnite, literally the base building Fortnite side of things, is intended to go free to play in 2018, early 2018. So you had to pay for sort of founder's access to the title. And what kind of drew me is I'm a sucker for style and design. So the visual sort of look of the characters, especially in sort of the early trailers and stuff for this version of the game, because there were much earlier trailers and the characters looked a little bit different. But I like the visual art style, and that kind of is something that gets me to buy into something quite quickly, because I'm a sucker for style and certain visual design types. Which is partly why I hate Funko Pops. Like, if I'm going to buy a figurine or statuette of something, a character from something, I want it to look like a really good version of that, not kind of this bulbous, cheap looking, like design wise version of a character. It's like, you know, I'd prefer like a little flair or effort to go into the sculpting of something, so you know, I can look at it with pride on my collection. I know that's kind of ironic from someone who this month finally collected all 120 Disney Infinity figurines and is collecting Amiibos and Skylanders, because there are varying levels of quality to all of those. I think Disney Infinity, their figurines are better looking than any of the others, because they have a unique design sort of philosophy. So all of the characters, while they are recognisably the characters from the different media they're from, they're still all fit in the same sort of place together. They all seem to work in the same style together. So I like it when that sort of effort's gone into something. And the Amiibos can look amazing. Like, I'm kind of being more picky with Amiibos. I'm only really collecting Skylanders because, although that I don't think they're finished making Skylander games, although I've not heard anything about a new one this year, they're relatively cheap and easy to find. And I've got a few. I have almost all of the games, although I realise there's differences between the Wii and the Wii U versions, and DDS and 3DS and Android, and there's too many different versions of those games available. So picking and choosing which game to buy is also interesting. But the Skylanders collection is sort of a semi-plausible target. I like the idea of finishing something for once. I don't tend to... It's not that I don't finish things, but I don't have an absolutely complete goal very often in my life. I tend to kind of 99% at best something. So I feel happy, even though it's a weird thing to feel happy about and done, that I've managed to collect all of the Disney Infinity figures. Anyway, so when it comes to selling me something, you know, the visual style of something is a big, you know, plus to me. And I just love the character designs of the best characters. Some of the characters in Fortnite have not been as cool or interesting or well designed. But of the best characters in Fortnite, I just love the design of them. Especially like the variables, the differences in size and sex, and you know, how diverse a string of character or hero designs they've got. So I quite like that. But I've been in since week 2. Almost playing every single day. Although not getting very far, because I spend a lot of time working on my initial home base or first defense shield sort of fort, which is not complete yet. So there's a lot of time collecting resources and stuff and kind of dipping in and out. But a lot of my time was spent playing that. And then they released the early beta for their Battle Royale mode. And there was some confusion because obviously Fortnite isn't available for people to play for free unless they pay to get access. But the people who paid to get access got access to the Battle Royale mode, which was free for people to play, but they got it early, and people thought, well, it's already out, what are you saying it's going to be out, are people playing it? So that caused some confusion. But it's been interesting to see the sort of PUBG-esque Battle Royale mode being implemented in Fortnite and released eventually for free for anyone, allowing people to download Fortnite but not actually own the PvE stuff, which is, I think, very strong. I mean, that's what they've been designing for all these years. And seeing it pick up and it being so new and such a... I mean, it's not new in the sense of a design concept, but it can't have been in development as long as many other games or Fortnite, but to see it pick up so much steam across all platforms. And while there have been some elements of controversy behind its development and the conflicts with the developers of PUBG, it's bringing its own unique style and visuals and gameplay hooks, more importantly, to the concept. And most notably, people on console cannot play PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, so it's good to have a version of that or a game mode like that available for people to play on console. But it's interesting seeing so many people getting the free version and the shifts from PvP and PvE back and forth, especially because they've just launched a Halloween update that ties the PvE coins you earn with the PvP sort of game mode, allowing you to unlock skins and items and almost entirely you know, visual stuff. Nothing that would kind of tip the game in your favour at all. So it's been interesting playing that game. And it has taken up a lot of my time. As did, until very recently, Destiny 2, which I got into about 2-3 weeks after everybody else, and just absorbed as much of that game as possible. And I found... I founded a clan for Destiny 2. And it's pretty much the same as the first Destiny, a bit tighter in some areas, a little bit easier when it comes to item and loot acquisition, character advancement is faster in that area. I don't know if it's a better or worse game, generally. When it comes to literally playing it, it's functionally as good as any Halo was. And the first game was, but there are elements in there that are questionable still. So, the first game, I never got to complete the Vault of Glass raid or take part in any team-based gameplay because, through no fault of my own, I don't tend to have people to play games with. The people I do know who are playing these games are probably in other countries on different time zones. The people in the same time zone as me are either not interested or not as friendly with me as I'd like. And I don't really have friends in my day-to-day life. I'm kind of unintentionally a bit of a loner. And I don't want to get depressed sounding, but that's kind of getting to me a lot lately. I'm feeling lonely in my adulthood now, despite having a loving partner who I adore, you know. There's an element of loneliness to things I want to be able to enjoy with others, and nobody seems to be willing or able to or interested in doing that with me. So I tried forming a clan, and it's got good numbers on Destiny 2, but again, these are all completely strangers, so despite having a clan of a good number of people, I've not found people who want to play certain game modes or events with me, so I feel like the next time I play Destiny 2, which we'll get to in a minute, that I don't think I'll be able to find friends, real life or new, and I don't think anybody will want to team up with me to take me through that content I'm missing out on. I know there are options in the game, but you know, I'd rather enjoy that with people who are going to talk to me like they know me or that do know me to an extent than a group of strangers who, if something goes wrong, they'll probably remove me from the game anyway. So there's that trepidation involved with playing that game. So I'm moving the microphone. There we go. I enjoyed Destiny 2, don't get me wrong. But I don't have a copy of the game at the moment for financial reasons, because we're going through a bit of a difficult patch with the wedding, paying for that, and things around that, like clothes and rings and whatnot. And with my partner changing jobs, there's sort of that weird period where you don't have as much money because you're waiting for the new job to kick in and money to start accruing again. So we've had to sell a few things just to kind of tide us over. So there's a period of me not playing Destiny 2 at the moment. But I do plan on picking that up as soon as I can, getting back into it. But there's just, I mean, while, like I say, I do have a clan there to kind of keep an eye on and try to motivate to try and join with me in games. You know, I don't think anybody's going to miss me, really. And I don't think I've got anybody to play with anyway, so. I mean, I have Fortnite, which a lot of people I know have, and where one mode is, you know, free to play for everyone. And I can't even find people to team up with and play with on that game, so getting people in other games is just going to be impossible, I suspect. But on the flip side, I have been playing some single player games. Cuphead for one, which I've only really dived into for a short stint so far because there's so many things out at the moment. October's always fun for that, isn't it? But while I see why people say it's challenging, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn, the stories of people having trouble even with the first and second bosses, or the first couple of bosses in that game, I don't quite have as much trouble with them. I can see how some will take a while, and a case of learning patterns and things. First couple of bosses for me, first try, on the normal difficulty. I think the run and gun stages are probably a little more challenging. But yes, I've not been finding it as much of a challenge or chore as some people have, so we'll see how that goes. I mean, it is as weird as it sounds comparing it to it, but it's like Fez in a completely different way. But it's a game I can look at forever and just play and have on, or watch somebody else play, because there's not a point where it isn't a marvel to kind of view. And it does make you wonder why two things, where that style of animation went when it came to 2D cartoons and films, and sort of that exaggerated surreal sort of style of animation went. Why did that die out? I mean, I know things like Disney and their output over the years kind of started like that anyway, but where it became successful was the crisper, cleaner, more pleasant to look at sort of stuff. But there's a beauty to that sort of surreal, exaggerated, over the top, confusing sort of art style and animation, that I think is a tragedy that was lost for so long, and the fact that it would be sort of revisited and reignited through a run and gun boss fighting 2D shooter arcade style game is interesting. But it also makes you wonder why so few 2D games were produced after the sort of uptake in 3D gaming. I mean, you can see why the 3D visuals appeal when they look really nice. They appeal. But again, it feels like something was lost when it comes to 2D games. The only 2D you tend to see is sprite-based art, right? There are moments like the Rayman titles and some other games that go for a deliberate sort of hand-drawn art style or art production, because there are, like I say, sprite art or pixelated art that is deliberately aping things that are supposed to look like hand-drawn but aren't really, because they're still sprite art, right? But it makes you wonder why there wasn't, and sad that there wasn't more experimentation with visual styles in the 2D plane when it comes to video games. Or even 3D games, as impossible as that sounds. Why haven't people experimented with the notion of stop motion and claymation and then kind of putting that in video games as a visual style? I don't know. But it's a game I definitely want to spend a lot more time with now I have some time off. I'm looking forward to getting my hands on Mario Odyssey as soon as I can. It's just come out. Sit down and get a real chunk of time with it. And there's a couple other games. Wolfenstein I'm interested in, but mostly I need to play the first of this new series of Wolfenstein games before, because I'm one of those people where I just can't play something in a series, even if it's really good, even if it's standalone, if I know that there was a sort of narrative spiritual prequel. Like, there are some games that are part of a storyline where the second game or third game is still really standalone. I just can't bring myself to play them. I have never played an Assassin's Creed game because I never finished the first one. I've played them, like, but through to completion. Despite the fact that I'm sure that the second game is really far easier psychologically and gameplay wise to complete. So I don't know about that. It's an odd one. But I do want to experience those games. I don't want to get started on my, you know, range of games that I own that I have never played or never seen to completion. Because we'll just go into this sort of Rise from Your Grave podcast sort of territory if I did that. And, you know, once again, I'm being by myself, it's not so much fun to do these podcasts. Sort of solo, I prefer to have a voice to talk with me and experience different things. Maybe if I find a partner or a couple of people to get back onto doing shows like that, I will. But for now, it's just me by myself, so... outside of video games and movies, Strangest Things 2 just dropped, so I spent the last week and a half watching the first Stranger Things again, sort of kind of really quickly catching up on it. And that first series is just crisp and there's very little wrong with that series. I think I've seen one episode of the second series, and I think there is, from what I've seen, sort of an element of, we know the first series was successful, maybe we don't quite know why, so we're kind of leaning into certain elements. So that first episode of the second series feels like it's going, oh, hey, look, guys, 1980s, hey? 1980s, yeah, there's some 80s songs for you, or there's some references in the background. Look, we've put a poster on that wall, and there's stuff on this, it's showing at the cinema, look, it's the Terminator. No, it's the 80s, yeah. You know, that's what you really liked about that last series, is how 80s everything was. And while, yes, the early 80s elements, in the sense of presentation, were amazing in that series, i.e. the soundtrack, not the licensed music, but the you know, soundtrack of the show, and that title sequence, and elements like that really helped sell that show. Again, I'm a sucker for sort of visual design and styles. So that really worked. I'm not sure it was the fact that it was set in the 80s that made that show good. I think it was the feel of the interactions between those characters. It could have been set 90s. It could have been set modern day. You know, it still would have worked. Certain things would change. I mean, there'd be mobile phones instead of radios and stuff like that. But the sort of in-narrative feel didn't really have anything to do with the fact it was set in the 80s. It just happened to be. And therefore, there were loads of references, you know. And I think they've leaned, based on the first episode only, they've leaned a little harder into the 80s stuff than I would have preferred. Hopefully not to the detriment or to the overall narrative arc. Because the stuff that is interesting about this series and the previous series or season is totally devoid and divorced of any sort of 1980s pop culture elements. I mean, that stuff is nice, it's fun there, but too much of a good thing, you know. But yes, I've droned on for way too long now. I have a few other things going on at the moment. I've just launched a Patreon page, so I have no backers. It's fine. I don't expect to have any for a long time. But if anybody out there is interested in backing, then it will go towards, you know, equipment for this show, recording video shows, more writing, sort of kind of diversifying what I'm doing and focusing, concentrating a lot of it. This show is still going to be relatively freeform, although I expect it to change over time, because it's the sort of concept for this podcast was a sort of exaggerated character version of myself talking about things that really happened, but not exaggerated in a cartoony sort of way, but I don't know. I wanted the show to have a voice that was different from much of what you get out there. And hence why I've not really focused on editing any of these shows. But I think the voice the show has needs to change to an extent. So hopefully that getting back into doing this weekly or monthly, depending on what makes most sense, will aid that. Hopefully no later than fortnightly, I think, is appropriate. Especially with, you know, those films coming up and wanting to actually experience some video games that are coming out and trying to diversify the stuff I'm getting up to post-wedding. So that should be interesting. But I do want to get more both factual and creative writing done as part of this. I want to start producing video content that is scripted and edited and more thoughtful for YouTube and other video services. I want to get to streaming once or twice a week on a regular schedule. I have a schedule planned and in mind, but how much I need to update that. So if I can over time just accrue a small amount of people who are interested in what I'm doing or trying to do, just to help me out when it comes to freeing up time. Because I've never been somebody who's interested in financial benefits of doing things, but having that support there, allowing me to free up a day of work, to step back from my position at my job, to take a more part-time or take off one day a week that I wouldn't normally have been able to take off, to freely work on things for this and other shows and other projects. That would be nice. It would be nice to be able to free myself. So hopefully in a few months, maybe a couple of years, with support from you guys or just a few people along the way that we pick up, I can do something interesting and maybe get some other people on board, because I do want and crave, you know, interactions with other people's ideas and other people's voices. I want to, because I'm interested in people, I think. So, you know, I'm launching the Patreon. I have launched a Patreon because I'm interested in gaining more time, not financial sort of gain. One leads to the other, sadly, in life, but either way, I'm going to still produce stuff that will go onto the Patreon page. I'm still going to be making things. I'm still going to be saving what money I can to kind of build up better equipment. I'm still working on turning this small office space into a reasonably workable office, to get soundproofing and things like that. But, you know, the difference is with other people's support, I can do it at a better pace, better quality, you know, so we'll see how things go. You know, I'm wishful thinking to an extent, but as part of that, one of the reward tiers has been that I will send out care packages to people. So I've been working on putting together a care package for anybody who sponsors at a certain level, that includes like stickers and a t-shirt and a unique canvas painting by myself, and a number of other things. I'm kind of building all up in my head at the moment, but I know there's a few things. So if you're interested, while I'm here and talking about this, in seeing the Patreon page, becoming a patron, or just seeing what these stickers, I've got the first lot of things printed up and sent to me, so there's a picture of some stickers on the page and some of my plans written out. There's not a lot there yet, but I'm working on things as we speak. Go over to www.patreon.com/Sebutsu. For those of you who don't know how to spell that, it's SEIIBUTSU. And you'll find things, hopefully, of interest there, if not now, in the future. One of those things I will say is, I've spoken about this on social networks already, I'm working on a script and essay talking about, of all things, the Alien versus Predator movies, because I was watching one of them recently, more fool me, and I was taken aback at just how, I won't say anything else actually, but at certain elements of that film. And so I want to kind of really look at the two Alien versus Predator big screen sort of takes, compare them to the other mediums they've been represented in, that sort of crossover sort of idea, like comic books and games and things. And also, to do that, I need to look at all of the Alien films, including Prometheus and Covenant, and three Predator films, and kind of really deep dive into some things. So what had started out as like a two film sort of investigation and dissection is turning into something that is at least 11 films in depth, not including video games and comic books and all that. So and then I need to be able to actually edit video, so I've got to work on finding some video software, video editing software that's not too basic, that allow me to do that. But that's my kind of big project for the moment, along with a load of little small ones. So hopefully that will be interesting, and hopefully by then I'll be able to breathe properly and not cough every so often. I won't be feeling sick still, and I'll be married by the time you hear this next episode. Yes, I'm not nervous. It's going to go well.